Hello there, everyone. It's me, Dave Splash, from thedarkstuff.com, the host of the Dark Stuff podcast. You're listening to episode 106. Thank you very much for, I would say, tuning in, but that's not how podcasts work. You download them, you stream them, you do whatever it is you do with the format here. Welcome to the show. Got a great one. 106 features an interview with none other than Miss St. Vincent herself, Annie Clark. This is a really, really great interview. It's my favorite one that I've done so far. I've interviewed a lot of people over the years, and I really enjoyed this one because it was very conversational, less of a sort of a formal kind of interview. I mean, I did have a list of questions, obviously, but it just felt it flowed. I didn't even get to most of my questions. I think I asked like two or three, and then the rest of the conversation just kind of stemmed from, you know, what she said, and then she would say something off of what I said, etc. So before we get to that interview, I want to do a little bit of housekeeping first. Let everyone know the podcast is now available on iTunes. We're available on Stitcher, available on Spreaker, available on Podomatic, available on YouTube. Any of those places, if you just search for The Dark Stuff or The Dark Stuff Podcast, you'll be able to find it, no problem. We have a Facebook page now, which is facebook.com/TheDarkStuffPodcast. My Twitter handle, of course, at Dave Splash. And the website where all this action comes from is none other than www.TheDarkStuff.com. Okay, so I got all that out of the way. If you like the show, please go to those places, iTunes and Stitcher and Spreaker especially, and rate the podcast. You know, give it some stars. Write a little review if you can. I mean, you know, I'm not saying you have to. I certainly don't feel obligated to pressure anybody to do it, but if you were so inclined, let's just say, and you had a spare couple of minutes, hey, I'd appreciate it. Okay, back to the interview at hand this week. I got the chance to meet with Annie Clark. This interview took place on April 1st of this year, 2014, in the basement of the Sokol Auditorium, where she was performing later that evening. Now, those of you in Omaha know that the basement of the Sokol Auditorium means the Sokol Underground, the same Sokol Underground that used to be the spot for Omaha shows, I'd say from up until maybe 2006, 2007, when I think the Waiting Room and the Slowdown opened up after that. So that used to be the spot of some legendary shows. Now it kind of serves as the backstage area when an artist is performing upstairs because, well, it's neither here nor there, but Sokol doesn't have much of a backstage, so they kind of put you down in the basement. Anyways, I started lobbying to get a chance to interview Annie Clark, St. Vincent. I'll be moving back and forth between those because although she is St. Vincent, it feels weird just referring to her as St. Vincent when I know that her name is Annie. So if you hear me just interchanging those, that's just the nature of me. I started lobbying early on to get a chance to interview her because she's an artist that I've really been into since her first album came out in 2007. But I wasn't even sure that it was going to happen until the day of, about an hour and a half or so before I was going to do the interview. Now, I thought it was going to happen for a long time, but when it got really close, I started thinking, well, you know, I haven't gotten the confirmation. Maybe it's not going to happen. You know, maybe I should just like give up. I mean, it's not going to, you know, but I really wanted this and I really wanted an in-person sit-down interview because I thought it would go really, really well. Now, I used a snippet or two of this on the radio, and but this is the full uncut interview, just so everybody knows that if you heard the little bit on the radio, you have not heard almost all of this. You've heard a small portion of it. We had a great interview. We discussed a lot of topics, and it wasn't just, you know, I've talked in earlier shows about the difference between doing a radio interview versus a podcast interview. And the idea behind a radio interview is to plug the gig coming up, right? Hey, you know, come down and catch me at the Sokol Auditorium on Thursday, or come down to the Waiting Room on Wednesday, whatever it is. And that's the kind of the purpose. That's why you sort of, and you plug the new album a little bit. The purpose of a podcast interview is to get a little bit more in depth and to maybe talk about some different subjects. So since I was kind of merging the two, I was doing the interview for the radio and for the podcast. Because I didn't bring a mobile rig down there, the radio, it wasn't going on live, so everything had to be pre-recorded. So I knew that going in, so that definitely affects the nature of the interview. As I said at the beginning, I think this came off very, very conversational and kind of like just a chat between the two of us, and I think it turned out really, really well. We talked about a number of topics, including her move from record labels, used to be with 4AD, now with a label called Loma Vista, just sort of general things about the state of the music industry, her collaboration a little while back with David Byrne, her meeting Eddie Vedder for the first time, who was like a childhood, a youth hero to her or whatever. It was just a really great interview. I shared a few things in there too. I'm not ashamed to say I shared a bit. Let me tell you, for those that don't know too much about St. Vincent, first of all, it's odd that you'd stumble on this podcast if you don't know anything about her, but I'll just go through a brief history. After doing some stints as a guitar player for groups like the Polyphonic Spree and Sufjan Stevens, Annie Clark started out embarked on her solo career, let's say, in 2007 with her debut album, Marry Me. I first caught her in 2007 or 2008, I'm not sure exactly when it was, but opening for the group The National. She played at the Slowdown here in Omaha, and I was mesmerized. You'll hear me talk about it in the interview, that I couldn't even watch The National afterwards. I mean, no disrespect to The National, great band. But after seeing her perform, and this was before she even had a band, it just shocked my senses. It just completely changed my perception, and I just didn't want to just see a normal band after that. I actually, you know, dipped out pretty early into The National set because I was just so, I don't know, blown away is just such a cliche, but I was just so overwhelmed, let's say, with what I heard and what I saw. She's released a couple albums since then. There's, of course, after Marry Me was the album Actor, then there was the album Strange Mercy, and this year, in February of 2014, she released her fourth album, the self-titled St. Vincent. In addition to working on her own, I mentioned she released an album and an EP with David Byrne from the Talking Heads. She's also collaborated with Bon Iver and a number of other people. She's a great singer-songwriter, has a really beautiful voice, a very unique lyrical perspective. It is very difficult to understand what she's talking about a lot of times, and I say that in a good way because I don't really necessarily want to know what every single song means. You know, it's not necessary to know the specific detail. I like the vagueness and the mystery and confusion sometimes. I just don't know what it's about, but the words sound good together, and that's really what counts to me when you're talking about a song. You know, you're not, it's not Yeats, it's not poetry, it doesn't have to be. It works, words work in conjunction with music, and she has figured out the way to do it to near perfection. She's also a virtuoso guitar player. She can shred, you know, not in the sense of like some heavy metal wanker like, you know, Yngwie Malmsteen or something, but not that she couldn't keep up with Yngwie. I just don't know. That's just not her style. She's an amazing player. Her music to me sounds like a cross or a mesh between people like David Bowie, people like Peter Gabriel, artists like the Talking Heads, just real eclectic artists that do a lot of different styles, and it's very hard to pin down exactly what they're doing. Let me see here. What else can I tell you about her? There are some great videos. If you have some time to look on YouTube, I would suggest that you do and Google her. There's a video where she plays two Big Black songs live, Big Black, the old group from the 80s from Steve Albini, and it's just masterful. If you're familiar with Big Black, especially the songs she chooses, they're just so great, and to see her singing them was fantastic. It's probably my favorite video of her on YouTube. Second favorite would be some guitar show that she was on. It's just where two guitar players, just bullshit about guitar, and she's doing the video with Matt Sweeney. Matt Sweeney, one of my heroes from the 90s, because he played with anyone? Chavez, that's correct. He was in the band Chavez. I knew him even before then when he was in a great group called Skunk from the early 90s, released a couple records on Twin Tone. You should seek those out. Anyhow, it's just a video where they sit there and bullshit about guitar and show each other little tricks, and it's a really cool video to watch. St. Vincent came to a lot of people's attention recently when she appeared at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, fronting Nirvana, the Cobainless Nirvana, obviously. She did a song along with, Lord did one. Kim Gordon from Sonic Youth did one. Joan Jett did one. And then later on that night, they did a set at a heavy metal club in New York City called St. Vitus. And she did a couple other songs. Again, there's a lot of YouTube videos out. Some of them are kind of crappy quality, but you'll get the gist of it. By the time you listen to this show, she will have already performed on Saturday Night Live. She was scheduled to perform on the 17th of May. This podcast is to be released on the 19th of May, so it will have already happened. I'm sure it was epic. I've already got the DVR set. No problem. It's going to be fantastic. This will be her biggest exposure ever. I've seen her on a number of shows before, including The Colbert Report, Jules Holland, Austin City Limits. But Saturday Night Live is a huge effing deal. This could be, a real, game changer, a career maker, etc. She is on the verge of becoming perhaps a major rock star, perhaps a huge influence on music. I hope it happens for her. I hope whatever kind of success level she wants to achieve, she actually achieves it on this one. And it'd just be great to see somebody who came from the underground, who worked extremely hard, who is so unique and inventive, to have them make it in today's music world. So I think I've said enough at this point. Why don't we get into the interview? And again, this was conducted in person, April 1st, here in Omaha at the Sokol Underground, underneath the Sokol Auditorium. We sat in a little booth in the back. If you're from Omaha, you know what I'm talking about, in one of the booths in the background there. And it's just a good interview. So everybody, thanks a lot for checking it out. I hope you enjoy this interview. This was really great to do. So here's my interview with St. Vincent.
Hey, this is Eddie Spaghetti from the greatest rock and roll band in the world, the Supersuckers.
Hey, this is Joe from the Mises.
This is Adam Franklin from Slow Driver.
This is Artie Lang from the Howard Stern Show.
Hey, this is John from the Fed.
Hey, this is Rick Kubik, drummer from Natarose.
This is Josh Hayden from Spain.
Matt Sharp from the Rentals, and you are listening to...
And you're listening to the Dark Stuff Podcast.
And you're listening to the Dark Stuff Podcast.
The Dark Stuff Podcast.
So I wanted to start off with a question about your new record label, because you switched labels between the last record and this record.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what prompted the change and how do you think it's going so far?
What prompted the change was I made 3 records with 4AD. 4 if you count the one with David Byrne, which was co-released by 4AD, and Total Mundo. And my contract was up. And I had a choice to continue or not. And I decided to go someplace else.
So it was just wanted a change. It wasn't like, for this next phase of my career, I need to do this or that.
No, it wasn't like deeply acrimonious or anything like that. It was just like, well, I'd like to see what else is out there and see how other people work. And there was a really good team at Loma Vista, actually somebody from 4AD. Ended up going to a new label, and it just seemed like a really good fit, and they were excited and I was excited, and so far it's gone really well.
Well, good. Mm-hmm. Is there, it's considered, 4AD is sort of still considered an indie, and this Loma Vista is now tied in with the major. There's not as much of a distinction these days as there used to be between things. Like 20 years ago, it was a big battle, are you supposed to be an indie or whatever? So, anyways, is there additional pressure that you feel by being on a quote major label now, or have you felt any different in what their expectations are of you? Or because it seems like you've been working your ass off for, well, not just now, but a long time, and every magazine cover you've been on, every major, you Google St. Vincent on YouTube, and you've done every interview show, so it's like, you're definitely there.
Yeah.
Do you feel that extra pressure, or is it just like, you've done this before, and it's you're used to it at this point?
No, there's no additional pressure. I mean, except that pressure that I would just put on myself kind of naturally to succeed at life or art or whatever. There's not you know, I know what you mean. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was a big difference between a major label and an indie label. And it was a hard thing to kind of even... There's a chasm between them that was difficult to even navigate. But it's the wild, wild west. The music industry is super complicated and super in a free fall, and nobody's making making money off record sales. So, and 4AD is, Beggars, that whole system, is a major label. I mean, they put out Adele. So there's not like, it's not like, you know, the David and Goliath kind of idea that it just doesn't apply anymore.
That's kind of what I thought. So in sort of that is, speaking of that kind of dichotomy from back in the day where there used to be this big distinction, now, is the word like rock star or pop star like a bad word to you or an embarrassing thing to you, or are you going to, this is what is going to happen, it could potentially happen. Is it a concept that sort of you are turned off by, you know, because back in the day it was, again, this fear of success that a lot of indie artists sort of had, or a pretend fear of success of just saying, I don't want that, and then there's no way it'll actually happen.
No, I know what you mean. I mean, I think in this day and age, it's so hard to have any level of success. And I mean, it's so hard to like pay your bills as a musician that I think it's not a question anymore of like selling out. It's a question of survival.
Yeah.
And it is always sort of a strange thing. You know, it doesn't happen anymore, but occasionally people will kind of use the term sellout, and it's like, well, the same people who aren't paying for your records are calling you a sellout for doing things not to monetize what you do.
Iggy Pop licensed his song to a TV commercial, and when he explained why he did it, I was like, okay, I'm over the whole concept of selling out now.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's a tricky world. It's like, you know.
I mean, he said, look, I wrote the song Lust for Life 30 years ago. I know what it's about. It's not about selling a car. I'm comfortable with someone paying me to put it in a commercial. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I get that, you know?
Yeah, it's a wild world. It really is.
I've read in articles that you learned a lot about performing, or enhanced your performing style with your tour with David Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
But was wondering, did he change your approach to songwriting or add anything to it? Or did you guys collaborate, or did you each bring in your own songs?
We collaborated, but we really met in the middle. You know, it wasn't the thing that makes David so exciting still as an artist and as a polymath is that he wants to see how other people work, and he's a real natural collaborator. So it wasn't this dichotomy of like teacher and student or that kind of thing. I mean,
you were at peer level. It wasn't like
it was peer level. I mean, that doesn't give either one of us, I think, enough credit. But I certainly had so much fun with the Love This Giant tour because it was very theatrical, and it just seemed to me like no longer enough to just get up there and play some songs on a guitar. Like that's fine, but I think the kind of tip that I'm on right now is this idea that everything is performance once you walk on stage. So you can some people are performing authenticity, and they're wearing a flannel shirt and they have a beard and they're singing seemingly heartfelt songs, but they are just performing a version of authenticity, like a prohibition, you know, Dust Bowl sort of version of American authenticity. And it's good, it's fine, I'm not saying anything bad about it, but we're all kind of essentially doing the same thing. So the fact that I'm acknowledging that this is all a performance is actually really liberating, you know, because I'm going, okay, well, I'm aware that every detail is going to be looked at and interpreted some way, so why not be in control of those details, as opposed to like, hey, I'm just walking on stage and being me.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what?
I wore these clothes all day.
Yeah,
no big
exactly.
Deal.
It's like, you know what? Being you is not enough. Being you is fucking boring.
Yeah, this day and age, you got to be better than you.
Yeah.
Now, you get compared to a lot of artists. A lot of articles always say the similar things. They say Kate Bush, etc. What's the one artist that you think you sort of resemble that nobody's ever pointed out, or that you were impacted by, that nobody has ever said, hey, you sound like this, or...
One thing I do think is interesting is that often, even though I think Kate Bush is wonderful.
Yeah.
But I don't really think I sound like Kate Bush.
No, and it's a reference that a lot of people don't know anymore. You know, it's like exactly. The commercials for the concert, they said, you know, comparisons that were on the radio. It's a comparisons to Kate Bush. I'm like, you know what? The average 18-year-old doesn't remember Kate Bush.
No, God, no.
You know? I mean, she hasn't performed in 35 years, so it's like...
The cool 18-year-olds know who Kate Bush
is. Sure, right,
right. But I know what you mean. It's not a current reference. I mean, she still makes records, and she's... I'm not saying she's not a current artist, but I mean, yeah, most kids don't know who that is. I don't really sound like Kate Bush, and I think it's interesting. I've sort of been able to evade it to some degree, but definitely earlier on in my career, there was just always a comparison to another female artist that yeah. I had, and a lot of times I had.
See, because I always hear Kate Bush, then I hear David Bowie, Talking Heads, two male artists.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't necessarily associate it. In that way, I just thought it's sort of a strange reference. Like, I used to manage this pop group in the 90s that was really into Lindsey Buckingham. They were called the X Action Figures.
Uh-huh.
And they really loved Lindsey Buckingham. That was like their idol. Okay, well, in the 90s, or early 90s, 92, 93, in like indie magazines, they didn't want to hear you say you're like Lindsey Buckingham,
no,
you know?
Yeah.
So it was like an odd reference that people didn't like. Mm-hmm. And it sort of turned them off, but it's like, that's what they're into. And isn't that sort of the independent spirit? Like, they can be influenced by Lindsey Buckingham the same way that you could by, you know, what's his name, Howard DeSoto or something like that.
Yeah, from, totally. You know, it's interesting. There is definitely, there's a canon of, like, cool bands. Like, there's, like, I'm not sure what it is, but every, say, 5 years, because the cycles are getting shorter because of the internet, every 5 years someone's like, you know what was an amazing band? Joy Division.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, Joy Division was an amazing band.
They were quite
like,
good, yes.
But they have this, like, this permacool thing. And every 5 years, someone's like, you know what? I'm going to sound exactly like Joy Division.
They just kind of discover it, yeah.
And it's, I mean, that's cool, because whatever. But there are other bands, like, nobody's ever, like a band that I love, like Steely Dan, nobody ever kind of comes around and is like, well, we're kind of doing a Steely Dan
yeah.
thing. It's really, it's going to be huge. All the
well,
cool
I told
kids
the guy, I don't know if you've ever heard the group Blinker the Star. It's a Canadian group. I told him that I thought their new album sounded like Steely Dan, and he was like, thank you, man. That is the best thing I've ever heard, you know, because he was getting these Flaming Lips comparisons and stuff that he didn't really think was appropriate.
Yeah.
And I said Steely Dan, and he was like, exactly. But, nobody else seemed to really care about that. If you could be in any other band at any time, which group would that have been, and what would you play in that group?
Oh, man. Every once in a while when I'm sound checking and for whatever reason not singing, I'm reminded how fun it is to just play guitar in a band and not be a front person.
So Angus Young, then.
Yeah, with the suspenders and the little...
The little short shorts and stuff, yeah.
You know what? I would be like Pat Smear.
There you go.
I'd fucking join Nirvana.
Join Nirvana. And you had the Germs, of course. Okay.
But I was thinking about your rock... Sorry, I'm eating raspberries.
No worries.
I was thinking about your rock star question.
Yeah.
And I know what you mean. Like, in 1990 or 89 or whatever, the thing was so bloated, like a rock star meant like being Poison or being
right.
Axl Rose or something like that. And so then you had like Nirvana or somebody, Pearl Jam and stuff like that come along, who were people who...
And they felt guilty about being successful.
They felt guilty about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I always thought that was so strange, but it was so true. Like I said, I used to manage bands and I had a little label. And that was the time when there was this battle. And if you were connected in any way, shape, or form with some big label or some big thing, you were tainted.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter that all those artists, if they were really honest, wanted to play bigger places. They're not embarrassed of having money. They're not, you know, whatever. They just, it was illegal to admit to that, basically.
You know what I think that was? Well, because, I mean, I guess if you go back and look, like Sonic Youth, Jesus Lizard, Nirvana, those, they were at one time on major labels
yeah.
in the early 90s. But I think what that was the 90s were actually a time of prosperity. And there was a sense that, like, well, you don't have to be a fucking gazillionaire. You can just, like, probably
yeah.
live maybe a comfortable, like, middle-class life or something. You know, it wasn't, like, a choice between, you know, squalor and
success. Well, there were so few, like, good rock stars at that point. Mm-hmm. In the 70s, it wasn't embarrassing. Neil Young was a rock star in the 70s.
Yeah, sure.
Nothing wrong with Neil Young. I mean, he's awesome, you know. And there were guys, people that you, even kind of crummy bands that, you know, but they're still around or whatever. I'm not saying Van Halen's crummy, but they were like big rock stars or whatever. And it wasn't a bad thing. It's just it kind of turned negative at some point as the 80s got played out into the 90s, the new decade, et cetera. But it was so fierce. And I look back and I hated that time because I made a lot of terrible decisions based on that same mentality that
if
I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't have made those same decisions.
Totally.
Because they were wrong at the time, you know?
Yeah, well, and times are tougher now, so I don't think people are as, like, afraid of success.
Yeah.
Like, kind of, like, pay my bills, like, get it done. But, you know, there is, you brought up the 70s rock star thing, and it is interesting. I mean, there's, you know, bands like Zeppelin, big stadium bands who, I mean, I think Zeppelin's great.
Yeah.
The rhythm section especially, but there was that period in the late 70s when, like, the snake started eating its own tail, and you just started having all these songs about, like, being on the road.
Yeah.
And there are some songs from that, you know, era lexicon, like Hot Blooded, and who's that, like, bands like Chicago. And that,
Foreigner, Chicago, Styx, REO, Speedwagon, Journey. Can you tell the difference between most of them?
All that shit I hate. They're
interchangeable groups because you never knew who was in the band. There was no identity with, like, oh, I really, you know, the guy I have up on my wall is the bass player for REO. It's like, no one does that, you know?
Yeah,
but
totally.
Yet they sold more records than anyone that you put on your wall, you know?
Yeah, of course.
It was such a bizarre
But it's
time.
Weird. It was weird aspirational music, too. It was like, but it was just all songs about being on the road and, like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, nothing else really. Nothing else. That's all you needed back then, I guess.
Girls, yeah.
Roll with the changes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Rambling, or just everybody's rambling. But that's like a whole. That started to be, I think, like the dark zone of rock and roll, which led us into, you know, Poison and all that stuff.
What happened in the 80s, which is a dark period.
Yeah.
Since you've become a little bit famous in your own right, and have you met anybody that you used to sort of idolize as a teenager? Or we're a fan of, maybe not idolized, mm-hmm. that you've encountered, and maybe the encounter was really good or the encounter was really bad.
Well, I would never say it if the encounter was really bad.
Okay.
I will say I met Eddie Vedder.
Okay.
Who was a big part of my life. You know, Pearl Jam came out when I was 10.
Oh my gosh,
9?
I'm so much older than you then.
Yeah, you know, so that was like a big deal. And I was... I got to thank him, I was very emotional.
He's a nice guy.
He's a sweet guy. And Prince came to the show in New York. I didn't get to meet him because he kind of is.
It might not have been that good of an experience. He's one of those guys I would wonder whether he would be nice or not.
Well, he
to you, he might be.
He came with a friend of mine. He came with a friend of mine, so I think it would have been totally sweet and pleasant. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, well, I was just always curious about that because I had my one negative experience.
Oh, with who?
Paul Westerberg.
Oh, really?
I met him when I was 18. I was the editor of the high school newspaper, so I got to go backstage and, like, meet them. And I had this little 8x10, those little 8x10 glossy band photos mm-hmm. that would be okay. So I had the whole band sign it. And when I got to Westerberg, I approached him and I told him who I was and everything. And he sees the picture in my hand and he goes, "Where'd you get that?" And I'm like, in the mail, and he grabs it out of my hand and he rips it into pieces.
Aww.
Okay, and throws it on the ground. And like everybody's looking like, holy shit, I can't believe that he just did that. So I'm like devastated, right? And I had all this other stuff to sign too, but I didn't want to give it to him anymore. And he's like, well, what else do you have? So I had this Musician magazine with them on the cover. So then he grabs it from me and then he signs it like 30 times. He keeps opening the page and signing it and opening the page and signing it. And then we started talking about stuff and he was cool for like 10 minutes.
Hmm.
But it was like, what the hell just happened? Like, why?
Maybe it was a really unflattering picture. It's like, oh, I never want this to see the light of day.
Well, there were thousands of them out there. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Well, okay, so I know we're probably got to wrap it up. So let me just ask you one thing. Since this is your fourth or fifth time in Omaha, I believe.
Yeah, is that right?
Let's see, I've seen you 4 times. So unless you're here some other time, yeah.
I'm so sorry about the first 3.
No. You know what? I mean... this is going to sound bad or whatever, but I saw you open for the National before you had the band and everything. And I went there thinking, okay, St. Vincent's cool. I'm here for the National.
Yeah.
I watched your set. I didn't even want to see the National after that. And I love the band. I love them too. You know what I mean? But it was so different, and it was just so like exciting for me because it's something I wasn't expecting. That just four guys being kind of sad and stuff just wasn't. I mean, ordinarily that would have worked for me, but it wasn't going to work for me that night. You know?
Oh well, I'm glad you enjoyed that show. I remember that tour because I wanted to have like some sort of like a light show, but I didn't have any money and anything, so I like went and I welded this crazy light thing together. It was like kind of cornball LED like light thing. The LED things were from Guitar Center, and it was like reacted to sound. And I remember that took like an hour and a half to set up. Like, wow. I could barely sound check because I was setting up this stupid light thing.
See, I just remember just being so impressed with how different it was and the balls it would take, no offense, you know, to, like, step on stage by yourself, because that would be petrifying to me.
Yeah.
To just do it with nobody else there and to have all those pedals and all the gear and all this. I ended up being like, wow, I can't watch just a regular band right now. I think I need to go home and do something else.
Awesome. Well, thanks.
Well, okay, I'll end it there because I know you got to go. And there you have it. That was the interview. I hope you liked it. Like I said, it was kind of conversational, wasn't it? I felt like we were friends for a day at least, you know. Probably more significant to me than it was to Annie. But either way, I'm glad that she was able to do it. I know that it was not the greatest time. I did the interview right after soundcheck. And which brings up a story, by the way. I forgot to mention in the intro to the show. I got there early, you know, like I said, I was told to, about it with an hour and a half notice, of course, to get down to the venue, be there at 5:30, as soon as soundcheck is over, you'll do the interview with Annie, and then they're going to go off and probably go to dinner or something. And so I said, all right, I'll be down there. I was right on time. I get there and the soundcheck was running a little bit long, but that's okay. And so I'm sitting there, at the sound booth listening to what's going on, just waiting for her to finish. And I noticed that they're playing Lithium by Nirvana. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, this must be the big surprise for later on in the show. I won't tell anybody, but now I'm in on it, right? So I want to, I'm bursting with this information because it was really cool watching her do it. But I didn't even understand the greater context, right? I just thought I had a scoop for tonight, that this was going to be perhaps an encore or something like that. So I see her do the sound check. I see the Nirvana song. I didn't bring it up during the interview, as you just heard, because I didn't know if it was cool to do and or to mention it, or if I should, or if it was something top secret, or what have you. But after the interview, I left. I came back to watch the concert, the show that night, and I bump into some people, and I'm like, oh my gosh! First of all, Annie Clark, awesome person. Second of all, you will not believe the surprise coming up at tonight's show. You will not believe how cool what the encore is going to be or whatever. Thinking I had this big scoop. And everyone's like, what is it? What is it, Dave? What is it? Oh, no, 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 no. I'm not telling you, okay? I want it to be as big a surprise for you as it was for me at the sound check. So the whole show, I'm waiting for her to perform Lithium. And the set goes and the entire main set ends. And then she comes out for encores. And I'm like, here it goes. Here it goes. And, of course, it never happened. She did a couple of songs for the encore, then left. Then the lights came up, and I was like, oh, crap, it's over. It didn't happen. So I didn't understand what I had just witnessed, okay? I didn't get it. Then the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing happened a couple weeks later, and it all made sense. She was kind of warming up for that song. That happened to be the one that she did with Nirvana. So there you go. That was it. All makes sense. But I looked like an idiot to the handful of friends that I told, oh my gosh, you're going to get this big surprise coming up. But that's pretty much all I need to say on this episode. Next week's episode, which will be 107, I interview an upcoming local band here from Omaha called See-Through Dresses. Now, this is a really, really great band. Their record is so good. It sounds like an early 90s UK shoegaze band that you never heard of, right? Like something that came out on Creation Records in like 1993-94, but it just, this band sort of, you know, the record never came out or something. But no, they're a brand new band from Omaha, Nebraska. They're about to embark on their first national tour, and we'll be interviewing them after that. Coming up, I interview some other local bands. I talk to Some of the people behind the Maha Music Festival coming up. Got a lot of great stuff in the works here on the Dark Stuff Podcast. As always, I thank you very much for listening. And hey, leave a comment somewhere if you like what you're hearing. If you think, hey, maybe you should talk to this person, maybe we should talk to that. Okay, I'm open to that. I'll try it. All right, we'll talk soon. This is me, your buddy Dave, the host of the Dark Stuff Podcast, saying goodbye. Goodbye.
Transfer of data is complete.